Good health is a crown worn by the healthy that only the ill can see. Your health really is your wealth. Join us for the next hour as we explore disease and attaining and maintaining good health. This is Dis-Chem Medical Monday, brought to you by Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
Good morning. It's Monday and my microphone is facing the wrong way. Thank you for joining us here on the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show. My name is Nicholas Ingle, and today we have a fantastic show for you, chatting about IBD, inflammatory bowel disease, as it's World Inflammatory Bowel Disease Day. I'm joined in studio by Dr. Normie. And Doc, I hope I don't butcher your surname. It's something I'm very good at. Habangana. Perfect. So I hope I got that right.
Excellent. Well done.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And the doc is doctor and medical director of the AbbVie South Africa. And we're also going to be joined by Nico, one of the doctor's patients. Let us have your questions on the studio WhatsApp number 061-895-1019. And we'll get the doc to answer them for you.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
It's a beautiful day in Johannesburg. Thank you for joining us on this Monday morning on the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show here on 101.9 High FM. It's World Inflammatory Bowel Disease Day, and I'm chatting with Dr. Normie Habangana. Doc, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having us, for having me, Nicholas, and good morning to all your listeners.
Good morning. So the first thing I did when our fantastic producer, Sina Pabetsi, sent through the details of today's show, I jumped online and said, what's the difference between IBD and IBS? I've got IBS, and I thought, hang on, is there something new I should know about? So could you break it down for our listeners? What's the difference between IBD and IBS, and what is IBD?
Thank you very much, Nico. And I'm sorry to hear that you have IBS. I hope you have someone who's assisting you with that. So as you rightly said, IBD stands for inflammatory bowel disease, and it's really an umbrella term, right? That encompasses chronic inflammatory conditions of the gastrointestinal tract. And these conditions are called Crohn's disease as well as ulcerative colitis. So the main difference between the two is that Crohn's disease can occur anywhere along the digestive tract, right? So we know that the GI tract or digestive tract runs from your mouth all the way to your anus. And with Crohn's disease, it often affects all the layers of the bowel wall. Ulcerative colitis, on the other hand, commonly affects only the colon and more the innermost lining of the wall. IBD can present with persistent diarrhea, abdominal pain, rectal bleeding, and as a result of this, patients will suffer with weight loss and fatigue. Weight loss and fatigue because they're not able to absorb the nutrients like you and me. In contrast, irritable bowel syndrome is more of a functional disorder where the bowel actually looks normal. So there's no inflammation, but it doesn't function properly. So again, with IBS, you'll have the abdominal pain, you'll have bloating and altered bowel habits. So this can alternate between diarrhea and constipation. However, there's no visible damage or inflammation as you would see with IBD.
Right. So I know for myself, for example, it's almost like a parent that makes sure you're eating correctly. Because the moment I go off track, particularly over the festival of Passover, where we have to eat a lot of matzah, I avoid wheat and gluten as much as I can. And then when we eat, it's very uncomfortable, very painful. But I can manage it really well in terms of what I'm putting into my body. My understanding is with IBD, it's not so manageable just with what you eat. You do need medical care.
100%. So the medical care is really targeted at trying to overcome that inflammation so that you can have normal, as you were, functioning and to get rid of that inflammation in the bowel.
Right. Now, I see we've just been joined by your patient, Nico. So we wanted to say, Nico, welcome to the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show here on Chai FM. And I just wanted to get Nico's input on what's it like living with IBD. Nico, welcome to the show, dude.
Morning. Thanks for having me. Sorry, I was a bit late.
No problem, man. I was going to say, fantastic name.
Thanks. Yeah, we kind of share a similar name, correct? Nicholas and Nico. Power group. thanks for having me on. Yeah, it's been interesting. I'm actually a patient to a different doctor who couldn't make it this morning. But yeah, the process of living with IBD has been an extremely long journey. It's been an interesting and emotional journey. It covers a lot of different areas that, into a person's emotional state that one would not really, even consider being an option, but it's been really trying. I am grateful, it's been a really tough process from the initial phases of almost losing my colon and having a diagnosis come out of nowhere. So I was literally fine one day. And the next day I just got hit with symptoms that were unknown to me, and I went through different stages of and different diagnoses. So I was unfortunately with the wrong medical team at the time, who gave me several different wrong diagnoses, and then I landed in front of the right team. My current doctor, gastroenterologist, is Dr. Tanya Khan, and she took the right steps to get me back on track through different medical treatments, like the biological drugs that they have on the market right now, which then promoted the lack of inflammation, because I had like calprotectin level of like over 3,000 at the time, and so these are right. The type of things that help kind of get it into back into a I wouldn't call it a normal state, but just something closer to normal or sense of normality.
Right. What was the initial impact like on your life? I wanted to get that from you, and then we're going to go back to the doc, and I want to get an understanding on what are some of the early warning signs, and then back to you, Nico, to see what you had. So yeah. What was the initial impact, and what was going through your head at the time?
Yeah, the impact was great. It was really, really bad. I spent, with my initial symptoms, I spent close to 2 months in hospital between two different healthcare providers. And that was literally from the get-go, with the odd break of a day or two when we think things are getting better and then you're back in. So the impact was really great. Obviously, it impacts your work. It impacts your relationships. I'm a father of 5 children, so I wasn't around for like almost 2 months to help. And it was in crucial times like, November, December, around the last parts of the exams. My wife obviously had to take on a lot of the strain when it comes to our home life, children's school, fetching, everything just got put on her. So from a personal standpoint, it took a lot on my life. From a medical standpoint, the impact was great, because to put it into perspective, before or just around the time I got diagnosed, it was like 105 kilos. So I was fairly well, fairly healthy. I lived a good life. I took care of my body. I loved going to the gym. So I didn't have any triggers or any warning signs, and it just happened randomly. And going through the journey that I went through in hospital with the different treatments, etc., and coming out on December 2nd, after being admitted on October 11th, then I lost almost 32 kilos. So it had a physical impact on my body. I couldn't walk. I had to lean on my wife to take steps. And obviously, when you've gone through the diagnosis, figuring out the medical treatment, etc., and once your treatment starts to show like it's working and you get home, then the impact again on your family, it's like they got to work around you. And luckily, having a good support structure in place for me has been great, because even though the impact was great, we managed to work through it together, and I had a lot of help around me.
Sure. No, thank you for sharing, and thank you for what you're sharing and your courage for sharing and coming on air. Doc, Nico mentioned that sort of it just suddenly happened. There were no warning signs. It just suddenly appeared. Are there warning signs that people can look out for, or is it just suddenly that your body starts fighting you?
So thank you very much, Nico, for sharing. So there are things to look out for, right? There's a few symptoms that when they recur, you kind of have to start thinking, could something more be wrong, right? And I think the first one is persistent diarrhea, where there's really frequent loose and watery stools, and they're just not improving over time. Sometimes you might have a little viral infection, and over a few days, that diarrhea might be gone. But When it's persistent and it's over a long period, that's when you need to start worrying. And then again, abdominal pain and cramping. And again, this is also tends to be quite severe, and it often affects the lower abdomen. And similarly to the diarrhea, it's also quite persistent. And like I mentioned, because of this inflammation, right, the lining of your colon is breaking down. So you will have blood in the stools, and unintended weight loss. Like Nico mentioned that, you know, he was a healthy guy, he was 105 kilograms, and then suddenly he was just losing weight. And I think that word is important, the unintended, right? Where you're eating normally, but now you're having this diarrhea, you're having blood in your stools, and you're just losing a lot of weight. And because of all of this, then you'll have the fatigue, the reduced appetite, and in some patients, there might even be fever. So As Nico mentioned, I'm not his treating physician. I work for a pharmaceutical company that, you know, provides some of these drugs that treat IBD. And one of the things that we really focus on is teaching general practitioners or your GPs about IBD, because they are the first point of contact for the patient. And they need to have that high index of suspicion so that when a patient does come with this persistent diarrhea, the unintended weight loss, and all the other symptoms that I mentioned, they just don't, you know, wipe it off as just a little viral infection. I'll see you again in a week. They just have to have that high index of suspicion. So we really count on them for that.
Sure. Thank you so much, Doc. Nico, from your side, were there any of those symptoms that were leading up to this that you can look back at and say, okay, that could have been an indicator?
Yeah, I think, to be honest, up until recently, understanding what the real triggers were, I had a little bit of an upset tummy, some diarrhea, but it wasn't persistent. So I had an on and off situation. And even when going into my diagnosis, it wasn't initially IBD, because one of the other symptoms and the more common ones that you know, can say is the blood in the stool. That's one of the biggest known symptoms to know, hey, I could potentially have either IBD, IBS, whatever the case may be. And I didn't have any of those. I mean, when I started having the real symptoms like the blood, etc., that was like 3 weeks in, you know, after, that's when we were like, oh, we got to do some endoscopies right now and figure out what's really triggering this. So I would say it's a combination of there was slight diarrhea, but we went to a doctor. It was just a normal viral thing and it went away. And about 3 or 4 weeks later, I just had this crazy stuff happening with my tummy. And then that's what led me to go and get admitted into hospital to figure it out. So symptoms can vary. And yeah, I think it also depends on the individual itself.
So one of the challenges, obviously, is getting the diagnosis right. And that's something I want to chat to you and Doc about as soon as we're back from this ad break. Dis-Chem Wellness Clinics for Adults offer convenient and professional care to help you manage health risks. Whether you're having your regular wellness checks, such as blood pressure or cholesterol, Dis-Chem Wellness Clinics offer you a broad range of health screening services, including female health screening with pap smears, family planning, and pregnancy screening. Fast, affordable, and with care. Find your nearest Dis-Chem Wellness Clinics inside Dis-Chem Pharmacies. Better health starts here.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
Thank you for joining us on this Monday morning. It's the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show here on 101.9 Chai FM. We're chatting IBD, irritable bowel disease, and I'm joined by Dr. Nomi Hamangana and Nico, who is a patient living with IBD. Let us have your questions for either Nico or the doc on our WhatsApp number 061-895-1019. Just before we went to ad break, we were chatting, with our guests and talking about diagnosis. And Nico, you were saying how long it took and having to go through different medical teams. What I wanted to ask the doc, and then we'll go to you, Nico, is how is IBD typically diagnosed? What are the challenges that face patients during the diagnosis process?
So I think Nico alluded to this in the beginning, how, you know, he had to go to several different practitioners for them to really get his ultimate diagnosis. Because there's a myriad of things that could be causing the diarrhea or the rectal bleeding or the abdominal pain. So it's really important for the practitioner to take a very full and comprehensive history from the patient to really understand how their symptoms started, what they've done to try and alleviate them, you know, and what's happening, what medications they're on, and then to do a very thorough physical examination. But this is obviously only the beginning. Then you can go and do some blood tests, you know, just a full blood count, just to see if as a result of the bleeding, the patient may be anemic, any signs of infection, because at the time, you're still trying to rule out any other diagnoses, right? So you're building up a differential diagnosis, we call it. Check for any other markers of inflammation. Then we can do a stool test. Nico mentioned this as well. We call it a fecal calprotectin, where it actually you test the stool sample to measure the levels of inflammation in the intestines, right? So if it's elevated, it does indicate that there's inflammation, which is common with Crohn's and ulcerative colitis. Then the mainstay really of diagnosis is an endoscopy. So that means putting a camera either through your mouth, so that's a gastroscopy, or through your anus, and that's a colonoscopy. And there, the gastroenterologist will be able to visualize the inflammation. And then even take a biopsy and send that to the lab to really confirm the diagnosis of either Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis. And once that is done, then effective management can then be initiated.
So just before we go to Nico, Doc, I wanted to ask, is there a hereditary component to IBD? Is there something that people with it should be letting their kids know, or is it just something that can happen to anyone?
So there is a genetic component to it. And yes, I mean, and that's why the family history or the medical history is so important, that you do want to understand if there are relatives who've had the same disease. With that said, it doesn't mean that if you haven't had a family history of IBD that you won't get it, right? Okay. But the genetics do play a role, yes.
Thank you so much, Doc. Nico, for you, what was the diagnosis process like? Because it took quite a bit of time, and it must have been, excuse the pun, quite gut-wrenching and quite stressful to go through until you had the diagnosis.
Yeah, it was. It really was. And thinking back to it, like, I would never want anyone or for myself to relive this. So it went around in circles, and I think I was just in front of the wrong medical team, because where I was at, there was no gastroenterology team. So for the first month, I was pretty much just on pain management while my doctor at the time, initial diagnosis, well, my GP was like, you've got a peptic ulcer, and, you know, I've got medication for that. And 3 days down the line, it got severely worse, and went into hospital, and they told me I had something called pancreatitis. So we were dealing with that first, and then it was like, no, it's still worse. And then I had the rectal bleeding, and it's like, okay, no, it's not that, you know, you currently have ulcerative colitis. And that was confirmed from the colonoscopy. And from there, I was just on pain management and with some steroids in the time, in the hopes that, hey, this is going to help you, but it actually made me worse. And then I was practically knocking on death's door. If that's what my gastroenterologist now says, it's like I had to be emergency medically moved to a different hospital with the gastroenterology team. From there, they were able to take the proactive steps. And Dr. Khan at the time, who's my current doctor, she obviously knew what was needed to be done and worked fast and efficiently, because I was on the verge of losing my colon. If anything, we ran certain biologics at the time, a day before my scheduled surgery to get my colon removed. That's how bad my diagnosis was at the time. But, you know, luckily, again, through certain medical treatments, it was able to be, I want to use the word saved, but you know, for now, we're still in a good position. So that's how it went. It was really a roller coaster. And the reality of this, and for those who are currently going through it, you'd understand, it's like, you cannot put the pain into perspective. I cannot explain how bad the pain is. It's so severe to the point where you're not even thinking. You just like, pump me with pain medications, please. So I didn't eat for almost 2.5 weeks, if not almost for that entire time. So that was what led. It wasn't because I didn't want to eat. It's because I couldn't eat. The pain was just too severe. And then you also have the fear of what I put in, it's going to cause it to be worse. And so you go through those emotions. But fortunately, you know, with the right medical team in front of you, you manage to get through the other side.
Sure. And we're very glad that you have, and that you are able to be here to talk to us, because it can be, it's a very unpleasant place to be. It's a very difficult place to be. And particularly with as a dad with a family, you know, you're starting to worry what is happening. So to go back to the doc, IBD is a chronic condition, doc. So what are the main treatments? And then coming back, it's like tennis between doc and Nico. So what are the main treatment options available today? And is it dependent on type and severity?
Thank you, Nicholas. So the mainstay of treatment is really steroids, right? But generally steroids are used for flare-ups. And then for maintenance, patients will be on immunosuppressants, and the gastroenterologists really want to target mucosal healing, right? So they keep on monitoring the patients to make sure that the actual mucosa is healed and that they're not just dealing with the symptoms. And if they see that, you know, from what they've put the patients on, so the immunosuppressants are not working, the steroids are not working, especially because you don't want to keep patients on steroids for too long because they have a myriad of complications, then the patients can then move on to biologic agents. So these agents are genetically engineered that target specific proteins that are involved in inflammation. And we have biologics called TNF inhibitors. TNFs are one of the main cytokines, or let me say hormones, that are involved in IBD. So by targeting that TNF, then you're able to suppress the inflammation and start the process towards mucosal healing. Then we also have a new agent of molecules called JAK inhibitors. And these are oral medications that can also help control inflammation by interfering with specific signaling pathways in the immune system. But of course, in addition to this, you know, diet and nutrition are important. And unfortunately, in some patients where either at diagnosis, the inflammation is so severe that the colon is not functional anymore, so it can no longer serve its function, they have to have surgery. So as Nico said, that he was spared surgery, luckily he didn't have to go down that route. But with some patients, this can happen. And especially in ulcerative colitis, the whole colon and the rectum can be removed, which effectively can cure the disease. But obviously that's not where we want patients to land up. And then just, you know, lifestyle modification, stress management, regular exercise, not smoking, you know, those lifestyle modifications also can help just to curb that inflammation. And of course, regular monitoring and follow up with your healthcare professional is really important to ensure that, you know, that mucosa is healed. And if not, what other additional measures need to be taken to ensure that we get you to a comfortable state where we're not just dealing with the symptoms, but we're trying to heal that mucosa and to ensure that the patient has a good quality of life.
Right. Thank you, Doc. Just before we go to Nico, I just wanted to touch on another question regarding the treatment. Having known people for the last 20, 30, 40 years with IBD, with Crohn's disease, where the options were really just to keep removing segments of the colon, how has treatment evolved over the years, and where do you see it progressing in the future?
Thank you. So treatment really has come a long way, because I think initially patients had no hope, right? As you say, surgery was kind of the ultimate pathway. Like every patient is going to end up having surgical removal of their colon. But now with the R&D that goes into IBD, you know, by all pharmaceutical companies that are involved in that space, we really want to avoid those kinds of complications and those kinds of outcomes for patients. So there's just continuous investment into better and easier treatments that are more tolerable or more safe for patients. And yeah, we've really come a long way where surgery is not the first or the initial thought when an HCP sees a patient with IBD. And like I say, you know, investment into research and development continues, and we're trying to find a drug that's very, very targeted to ensure that we get to healing as soon as possible with, you know, and as soon as possible and as safe as possible.
As soon as possible and as safe as possible. I love that, Doc. Thank you. Nico, for you, how was the treatment process? How did it evolve? And how are you doing now? I think one of the questions I wanted to ask as well is, have you been able to get back to gym? Because I got the sense that you love gym.
I do. I used to. I'm in conversations with my doctor about it. I think we just want to make sure that I'm in a position to be 100% okay with it. You know, there's a lot of forums that I'm a part of right now where people living with it longer than I have. And, you know, there's some positive feedback about physical training. There's some negative feedback, because one of the common things that people with IBD, ulcerative colitis or Crohn's, can face is something called flares, which I think doctor can talk to a bit more about. But flares are real, and there's certain things that could trigger your flare. And so one of my biggest fears is having a flare, because I've been in the clear since being discharged in December. So I haven't had one, and I don't want to put myself in that position. When it comes to treatment, so the biologicals that I've mentioned, it's consistent. It's not a once-off thing. So I've got to do mine every 8 weeks. I've got to get infusions every 8 weeks. That obviously help make sure that my inflammation markers are down and keep it consistent. I've got medication that I've got to take on a daily basis. So you have to be a good patient. So talking about flares again and being in a position where it might trigger up again. One of the things, in my opinion, and from my experience in ensuring that you don't land in a position like that or have a flare again, is being consistent with your medication, being consistent with what your doc tells you to do. So ultimately, being a good patient, right? Being what my doctor says is a Model C patient. So yes. I've even got up like a medication box Monday through Sunday, day and night. You know, you got to put your medication in and you got to make sure you take them on a daily basis. And I think the fear of having these triggers again causes you to be a good patient. So then you're like, I'm just gonna, it becomes like your daily routine. So you make sure your medication is up to standard, and ultimately that's what's going to keep you okay. So, you know, depending on what the future holds like, I'm not sure, but for now that's currently what keeps me in a good position.
Right. It's so important for us to understand the power that we have when we're patients. And I love having Dr. Lucille Bloomberg, or Professor, excuse me, Lucille Bloomberg on the show. She talks about patient power, and that's what she drums home. And it's fantastic to hear you talk about the responsibility and the seriousness that you're taking with your care. Have you found that the diagnosis has changed your relationship to your own body? And has it improved the connection?
100% yes. I'm a lot more fearful of what I put in now. And I know that that's like a standard thought that we're all supposed to have, but I think that we all become a little bit too comfortable when nothing has happened and I'm okay. I can eat what I want, I can drink what I want and do what I want. And now that I'm in a little bit more of a restricted position, I take it a lot more serious. So I listen. The core message is to listen to your body. And again, right. You're not feeling well, you're feeling things are not going the way they're supposed to be. You ultimately know your own body, and you got to listen to it. Don't be like, ah, it's fine, I'll be okay tomorrow, over-the-counter medication. Doing things like endoscopies, doing things like regular checkups with your GP and blood work is important, right? It's very important. And for me, I'm way more conscious about what I do right now, way more conscious. I know I'm slowly getting to the point of triggers. So one of the things you have when you're an IBD patient is you have certain triggers. There's certain foods that you can eat that will trigger a reaction, cause you to have diarrhea, and then there's things that are okay. So that's another thing. You've got to go through, if you're newly diagnosed, you go through the process of elimination. You find what you can eat and you can't eat, and unfortunately you've got to do it in a way where you've got to be prepared where there might be a consequence, like for the next 3 days I'm gonna have already some pain or discomfort or runny tummy. And once you go through that process, then you get more comfortable and you have a nice list of things that I can eat, and you just focus on that list and you can experiment every now and then. So yeah, impact is there, and that's kind of what I do on my day-to-day basis now, is really just stick to what I know. And I do ask a lot of questions to my current doctor. So if I'm concerned about something, because this disease works with stuff like your stool, and it's conversations that people are not really open to have, you've got to become comfortable with asking and talking about these things that we're a normal person will be very uncomfortable with or self-conscious about. So you got to get into that mindset of being more comfortable to talk about these things with your GP or with your gastroenterologist. And again, it's all in, you do it to give yourself better understanding and to give yourself peace of mind. So that becomes vital as well.
So the deeper your understanding, the greater your peace of mind.
That's pretty much it. Yes, 100%.
Fantastic. I've got a question for the doc when we come back from ad breaks, talking about the different patient treatment because of the differences in the disease. But Nico, what I wanted to ask you just quickly before we go to ad break is, have you sort of changed the eating at home? Has the family supported you in this and changed how you guys are viewing food? We'll get that question from Nico when we are back from our ad break. You're listening to the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show here on 101.9 Chai FM. Let us have your WhatsApp questions for our guests on 061-895-1019.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
Thank you for joining us this morning. You're listening to the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show on 101.9 Chai FM. We're chatting IBD, irritable bowel disease. And with our two fantastic guests, a doctor and a patient, Doc, want to come to you now. With how do you tailor the treatment plans for each patient, given how different IBD can present from person to person? Is it personalized medication? What's the doctor's role in navigating this complex disease?
So Nicholas, just as a reminder, so the I in this instance stands for inflammatory. So
inflammatory
bowel disease. Yes.
Sorry. Inflammatory. Sorry.
No problem. So I love what you said earlier about patient power, right? So we like to also refer to it as shared decision making. So it's important to take the patient along that treatment journey with the HCP. I think back in the days before some of us were born, the doctor decided that, okay, Nicholas, you have this, I'm giving you this, go home, mm-hmm. you know? There wasn't that conversation that you had to say, okay, doctor, but what are my options? If I take drug A or I do treatment A, what will happen? If I do treatment B, what will happen? You know, just the pros and cons of each of the medications or each of the approaches. And based on what the patient, which stage the patient is in their disease, the amount of support that they have. For example, Nico mentioned that he goes for infusions every 8 weeks. A patient who is maybe in rural KZN can't go for infusions every 4 weeks or every 8 weeks. So this patient might benefit from having an injectable that is in his fridge, let's say, for example, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's just those kinds of considerations that you need to take into, or those kind of factors that you need to take into consideration. The level of support that the patient has, their mobility. So I think it really has to be a very patient-centered approach, and you can't have a one-size-fits-all. Yes, we have guidelines that say when a patient is at this stage of the disease, you give this specific drug or you intervene in a specific way, but you also need to be cognizant of where the patient is at. Like, so for example, some patients would be suffering for so long that they now have anxiety about being in social mm-hmm. situations, you know, or they are very depressed, or whereas maybe a new patient who is just starting the journey hasn't suffered from those social consequences yet. So that patient and a patient who's anxious about even going outside the house, the approach needs to be different. So I think it just needs to be a very patient-centric approach that also has that also with that mindset of a collaboration between the patient and the HCP.
But that's actually such wonderful news to hear that the treatment can be tailored, that it's not one size fits all, because if you are in rural KZN or you do have social anxiety around what you eat, that treatment can be set in place for you. And obviously I'm assuming that it evolves over time as the patient maybe ages and the condition may evolve.
100%. So, and I think it comes back to your initial question about the evolution of the treatment over the years, right? even when we think about clinical trials, there's never a drug that can manage 100% of the patients. It'll be 70 or 75. There's still that 25% that needs something different. And that's why we continue inventing and investing so that that 25% can also be catered for.
Which is absolutely fantastic. What is some of the mental challenges? You alluded to that in terms of anxiety, maybe about, you know, eating out publicly and so on. And I know for myself, I've been sober for 18 years. And my experience was it was terrifying going to weddings or functions where there was going to be alcohol and I didn't know how it would make me feel in terms of having people around me drinking. And I would rather opt to stay home, but that can then very drastically erode your quality of life. But you need to find that balance between the two. What is the effect that you've seen of the disease on people's mental health?
So we speak to many patients, right? Because we really try and ensure that our approach and how we manage things is we do it with the patient at the center. And one patient once told us that it's so difficult that when she goes out, she needs to, or when she gets to a restaurant, she has to first try and see where's the toilet and kind of position herself close to the toilet. You know, so little things like that that you don't even think about, because now every 2 minutes she needs to get up and use the toilet. People see it and they wonder, but what is happening with, you know, said friend? Why is she always up and down? And now everyone is staring at you. And like I said, it leads to the social anxiety. So you don't go out anymore. You stay at home. And now that leads to depression. So there's a lot of emotional issues that are attached to IBD. So that's why it's really important to ensure that we manage the symptoms, yes, but also ensure that we heal the gut so that the patient doesn't have to continue suffering and they can live a normal life.
Right. And as Nicu alluded earlier, where he's on different forums and chat groups, are there support groups for patients with IBD that they can go and share at and be part of to gain a deeper understanding of what the journey is like?
100%. So one of the support groups that we work quite closely with is IBD Africa. And I think if you just Google IBD Africa, you can find the support that you need. Because like you say, sometimes speaking to your doctor is not enough. You know, we will never really understand the emotional and social impact that you go through. Yes, we read about it. We hear about it from you. But having those conversations with people who are experiencing the same things and going through the same challenges that you are, it really makes a huge difference. So patient support groups are essential for any chronic illness, to be honest.
Right. And just before we're approaching the next ad break, what are some of the myths around IBD that you wish people would understand and maybe that we can change in the public view?
So I liked your first question about the difference between IBD and IBS, right? So there's this perception that, ah, man, it's just a sore tummy. Ah, man, it's just a bit of bloating. You'll be fine. Not understanding that this is an immune system disease, right? So there's lots of complications that can occur. So patients can have intestinal complications, so complications within the GI tract, as well as extra intestinal complications, so outside of the GI tract. A lot of patients with IBD will also have arthritis. They'll have inflammation of their eyes, skin conditions. They'll have osteoporosis. Sometimes they've got kidney stones. So it doesn't just affect the gut. It goes way beyond that. So it's not just a sore tummy. It's actually a life-altering disease.
What can those who are family and friends, you mentioned the example of the young lady going out for dinner and needing to sit close to the bathroom, what support can we give patients of IBD?
I think the first thing is really to understand the disease, right? So as much as it's important for the actual patient to understand, it's important for the support support group and the family members to understand. When I say that, no, you know, today I'm really not well, I can't do A, B, and C, even though I did commit to it previously, just understand that I might be having a flare-up. So Nico mentioned that, you know, he's trying to avoid flares as much as possible. And flares are those periods when the symptoms of the condition worsen or just suddenly become more intense, right? So the patients experience a resurgence of symptoms because of the inflammation. And flares really vary, you know, sometimes they're very intense, they can be a very short duration or long duration, and their occurrence is very unpredictable. So family members and, you know, the support structure just needs to be cognizant of that. And I think just understanding the disease, understanding how the medication works in turn, and also from a nutrition perspective, just be able to support your loved one through this journey.
I absolutely love that. We're going to go to ad breaks now. And then when we come back, I'd just like to get your thoughts in closing. What would you want the public to know, our listeners to know and to focus on? Let's go to ads and we'll be back with the doc and Nico.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
You've been listening to the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show here on 101.9 High FM. I've been joined by patient Nico and Dr. Nomi Habangana. Did I get it right again? Sorry, Doc.
You did.
Excellent. Thank you. Yeah, it's an interesting thing with just before we go into the question, for myself, with my dyslexia and my ADHD and anxiety, because obviously being sober now, my anxiety can take over a little bit. My brain locks up when I read. And when I do so, what I found it really helpful is just to explain to people, hey, this is, I'm dyslexic, I struggle to read, I might mess up your name. And it's never ever been a problem. And maybe that's something that I hope patients can take in explaining to people. Where most people are kind and they're understanding and they'll be supportive, that listen, I got to sit close to the bathroom because I'm having a little bit of an issue with my gut and I might be running back and forth. It's not contagious. You don't have to worry about anything. What your thoughts on that, Doc, on patients empowering themselves and sharing what they're going through?
100% agree, Nicholas. But to Nico's point, you know, when you think about stools and, you know, rectal bleeding, it's not an easy conversation to have. And that's why it's also important for, I think, shows like this. So thank you very much for this platform where we are able to educate patients, not just patients, but just the general public about these issues. So when someone says, I have IBD, they're like, oh, yes, I heard about this on Nicholas's show. I just need to show a little bit more grace, you know. So I think that's really important just for the public to educate themselves. And I mean, you don't need to know all the details and the pharmacology and the physiology of everything, but just the basics, just what it is and how it can affect the person around you. I think that's really important.
Fantastic. And then just as we wrap up, Doc, any closing thoughts that you'd like to share?
Absolutely. So again, thank you very much. And I think the key takeaway is really the importance of achieving a comprehensive approach to IBD treatment, right? So one that addresses the physical symptoms, but also focuses on healing the mucosa while considering the emotional and psychological aspects of living with a chronic disease. Ensure that people really engage in open dialogue with their HCPs, with their partners or, you know, support system, because it's really very crucial to navigate this IBD journey effectively, having that comprehensive support.
Absolutely fantastic. Thank you. I know Nico was possibly on another call. Nico, are you with us still? Are you able to chat as we wrap? Fantastic. Right. What are your clothing thoughts?
Well, I think closing thoughts is exactly like Dr. Nomi has mentioned, it's obviously just going through. If you are somebody living with it right now, you obviously understand, and hopefully from our experiences and learnings, you get a little bit more insight. If you're someone newly diagnosed, if you happen to come across this, I think the important thing to remember is that make peace with that. This is going to be your reality. I think the sooner you do that, the better it is for you to get through your healing, the better it is. And I think that's the moment you actually start your journey. The reality is there will be a lot of pushback from yourself, a lot of denial, a lot of frustration, and a lot of sadness that comes with the fact that this is happening to you. But once you get over those initial humps, and once you get in front of the right team, medical team, and once you understand what this disease, the diseases and what you need to do to obviously get on top of it, life will get better. There is a sense of normality that comes from it. And yes, you will be living with a chronic disease. This is going to be your reality. Once you come to the realization and you make your peace with it, life gets better. You know, you get back to your day to day, and you realize that, you know what, it's not as bad as you initially thought it was. And I mean that very lightly, because it is bad. Mm-hmm. You will suffer. But again, when you have the right mental state and you're positive about it, you realize that your triggers or any negative side effects that come from it, it becomes easier for you to deal with. And it's no longer like a shock. You know, you get used to it. It becomes your routine, and I think the biggest message is you will be okay. There's a lot out there that can help you with this, and you will be okay.
I absolutely love that in closing. Thank you for sharing that. Nico, the message I got from that is focus on the healing, not fighting the diagnosis. Thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Nomi Havangana and Nico. You're both legends. Thank you for coming on the show. I know this is going to make a profound difference to people who listen to it, and really grateful for having you guys here. Thank you.
Thank you very much for having us, Nicholas.
Awesome. You've been listening to the Disco Medical Monday show here on 101.9 High FM. Big thank you to, as Benji says, the man on the buttons, Craig Guthrie, our controller, and our producer, Sina Pabetsi. I'll chat to you guys next week.